Continuing in mitzvah Resh Mem Hei 245, not to plant or to graft two different species of plants together. And we're in the paragraph beginning, V'amru zichron al-Rachel, is the my edition, Shehazorea Zeroim Kilayim, if you did go ahead and plant different plants as Kilayim, V'chein Amar Kivilonos Kilayim, if you did graft two different species of trees, even though you receive the penalty of lashes, the prohibition does not extend to after the fact prohibition to eat the produce that grows. So you're only not allowed to plant it, but it has absolutely no effect whatsoever. Even the biggest rabbi with the longest white beard has no inyan whatsoever to refrain from eating the produce. The same way, let's say you have a tree that was grafted with two different species. So then you're allowed to take a new offshoot branch that branched out of this tree and plant it somewhere else so it should grow into another tree and eat the produce, of course. But you're even allowed to plant the lechatchila. You're only, once it grows, and now you have a species of tree. Now you have a species of tree that's sort of genetically, not genetically, but is a mixture of these two trees. As long as you're not doing the grafting or doing the planting, that even the produce that's grafted already, even something that has had an avera done in it, you're allowed to replant. Oli zroa mizera shenizra kilayim. So let's say two vegetable things are planted together and they grow, so then somehow they mix. I don't think that actually works by vegetables, but whatever it is, so you're allowed to. It doesn't genetically change in anything at all, but even if there were two vegetables that grew mamish together, two different types of vegetables, then you're allowed to take those seeds, even though they're kilayim, and you're allowed to plant them. Once the planting, the original planting is done, then there's no prohibition whatsoever. So now, the Sefer Chinuch is going to go on a botany lesson. V'hazroim nechlokim l'shlosha chalokim u'shlosha shemos. Types of plants are non-tree plants are divided into three different types. Ve'elohein, tevua, grain, kidneys, legumes. As we know from Pesach, that there's a difference between tevua and kidneys. Tevua is the chameshes mine dagon, traditionally assumed to be wheat, barley, rye, oats, and spelt. Well, that's actually what Chachamim at the times of the Mishnah had in mind when they said the five species of grain there's been a lot of literature about that, whether perhaps rye, especially in oats, should not actually be considered part of the Chameshes Minei Dagon, but whatever it is, those five species of grain are called tevua. So kidneys is anything else that you eat the seeds of the plants. So any types of legumes, rice, things like that, that we know from Pesach, this applies the prohibition of kidneys. Zirone gina, there's some things that are called kidneys, like mustard seeds, right? So mustard seeds are technically kidneys, but some, you know, we don't eat mustard on Pesach, even though, why on earth should you not be allowed to eat mustard on Pesach? It's not a grain-like thing at all. When we say the prohibition of kidneys, really the original point was, A, to avoid confusion between them and the five species of grain which really can become chametz, and B, they used to grow in the same close proximity, and C, you know, there could be mixtures easily if you're going to the store and you want to buy some bean flour, so obviously it's very possible that they use the same container or something like that. So for whatever the various reasons of the minhag developed, that Ashkenazim don't eat kidneys on Pesach. But mustard has nothing to do with these things. Mustard is not grain-like at all. The whole point was there could be some confusion with grains. But in any event, since it's considered kidneys in the halachic sense, so for that reason, we don't eat mustard on Pesach.
Instead, mustard seeds, which are ground up, you know, before you eat them.
Right. But you could imagine that the original, that like beans and lentils and rice are much grainier. You grind them into flour. They resemble grain. If you put them in a, if you cook them in a pot, they puff up like grain. That's not really chametz on a derice or even a, you know, according to the strict din derabanan, But nevertheless, because of this confusion that could arise, but mustard seeds are not used in this way. It's a spice, right? They're not used in the same...
starch, which is a mainstay.
Correct. So for that reason, so the prohibition of mustard is raises some eyebrows, but nevertheless, that's the accepted prohibition. And they have these replacement mustards on Pesach that are made with other flavors and, you know, use turmeric to turn them yellow. I'd rather just go Pesach without mustard, personally, but whatever. I have to each their own. And zeronegina, garden seeds, which are plants where you plant the seed and then you eat the plant as opposed to eating the seeds of the plant. V'yesh mizeronegina k'tzasam shenikrayin mine yarak, or yarak. So the two, there are types of zeronegina, of garden seeds, which are called vegetables because you eat the plant as opposed to the seed. Lettuces... tomatoes, these are all yarukos, even if they're not actually green. They don't actually have to be green in order to be considered yarukos. These are all considered, these are all called vegetables in halacha.
How would you call vegetables which are not green?
There's no special word. Because most of them are green, so they come from the word for yarukos. Yarukos, from the same word for green. But yarok, of course, does not actually mean green per se, in the technical sense of modern Hebrew. Yarok in Mishnah Hebrew can mean various colors that are not described by any other color. So it could be a little yellowish, brownish, greenish. All these types of things could be called yarok in halacha. That's what we're talking about with Nida when it talks about dam hayarok. When it talks about, it doesn't mean green blood, according to most authorities. It just means yellowish. Avabi shenesru lanu la'arev kol shnei minei zrayim, avabi shei mishem echad. So even if they're both zeronegina, or they're both kidneys, so you're still not allowed to plant them together. Or like you're not allowed to plant wheat and barley together, even though they're both types of grain. They're both part of the species of grain. Nevertheless, you're not allowed to do it because they're different species. Beans and lentils, they're both kidneys. Since they're a little different, they're still considered to be kilayim if you plant them together. Okay, so how does this go? Shim nis arev shelo bechavana chita im seora chelak echad beyeser mikaf gimel ein tzarech lavor osan. So if you have a piece of a seed of wheat that fell into a bunch of barley seeds, if there's 24 times the amount of barley seed as there is of wheat seed, then you're still allowed to plant it because you don't need to sort it out.
Where do we get the number 24 out? I mean, as opposed to 60, which we're familiar with, mother.
Right. I mean, it doesn't have to do with taste. The idea of something being batel 1 in 60 is the assumption being that if you have a mixture of milk and meat, for example, so if you have a small amount of milk, so the estimated amount, the real issue is you have to make sure that the milk does not affect the taste of the meat dish. So that's why the assumption, the 1 in 60 is just an approximation. The way all the classical, you know, in Chazal, it says what you do is you give it to a non-Jew to taste. Some Rishonim hold that it needs to be as the chef, a non-Jew who's specially trained with particular tastes. Whatever it is, so you give it to a non-Jew to taste. The non-Jew says, no, I don't taste any milk whatsoever. There's no impact whatsoever on the flavor of this cholent. Then you're allowed to eat it. And you're allowed to rely on the testimony of a non-Jew in this case because since he can't lie, because if he lied, you're going to figure it out right away. And you're going to take, because you're going to now say, oh, great, the goy paskin that the cholent's mutter, you're going to taste your cholent. You're going to be like, This tastes like milk. How could you say that to me? So his words are going to be assessed right away by the Jew. So you don't assume that the non-Jew is going to lie because he's going to be found out right away if he in fact did lie. But if you don't have a non-Jew available, so the Chachamim estimated that if something is less than 1/60th of the mixture, so then it will not affect the taste. So that's why nowadays the minhag is not to rely on the tasting of a non-Jew at all, but always to measure 1 in 60. Of course, you have to use some seichel. If you put some very spicy hot pepper in a dish and you find out that the spicy hot pepper is not kosher, then you're not allowed to eat the dish unless there's a huge, huge amount of other stuff because it's going to affect the taste, even if it's more than 1/60. So that's a halacha lemaisa, so we have to keep that in mind, that not everything is always but the 1 in 60. It's only if two foods of moderate taste levels fall into each other, then you have the rule of 1 in 60.
Is it this rule which applies to, let's say, vitamins, medication? If you need to take it, I guess you can. Vitamins, let's say, which have a gelatinous cap on it.
Boy, that doesn't have, what do you mean? That doesn't have to do with 1 in 60.
It's not a mixture. And also, because the gelatin itself is not really like a food. It's not the only thing.
Right. The hetero to take medicines and perhaps vitamins, vitamins are much more questionable, is that you don't have kavanah to eat them. So when something is inedible and you don't have kavanah to eat it, so then it's mutter.
It doesn't taste anything.
Right. So that's why if somebody has kavanah, again, if there is something that's inedible, so on a deraisa level, that's not kosher. You're allowed to eat it. But on a derabanan level, since you say, delicious, this inedible object, and you take a bite out of it, so midirabanan, so it's forbidden to do that because of the principle of what's called achshave. So you consider it to be a food by your act of eating it. But if you ingest it, but you don't really want to be eating it, so therefore that the principle of achshave does not apply, and even midirabanan would be permitted to eat the non-kosher substance.
Even if you're not actually eating it, you're just swallowing it.
Well, that's better. Some are machmir that they wrap it, if they take non-kosher medicine, so they wrap it in paper, like a little bit of tissue paper, so it shouldn't, so you don't get any hana'a whatsoever. It's not going to hurt you, a little tiny bit of tissue paper, but strictly speaking, that's not really required. Just an extra chumrah that some people have. Fine. So where does this come from? That's a good question. It's what the chachamim had a kabbalah to do, but I don't know if there's any svara particularly behind it. But pachus became yavaroson. So if it's less than 1 in 23, so then you have to pick out the wheat seeds or whatever is in the minority. I'll say this later. But if a piece of wheat, the seed of wheat was mixed into vegetables, shiuran echad, me'asrim v'arba, me'machazor, me'veisa, me'oso hamin, shel zeronegina. So the shiur is 1 in 24 with that which you would plant. It has to be in the amount that you would plant in the base, which is, how does it tell you in contemporary units? 700 square meters, 7,500 square feet. Okay, if we need to know the exact measurement, we'll look it up later. Base is a very common measurement of area in Chazal, like we have in the famous halacha of Erevin. So we have what's called a karpef. A karpef. Not a normal word used in modern Hebrew, but a karpef is an area like a field that's planted that even if it has a wall around it, so you're not allowed to carry there. Because it's a special halacha, pashtus is the rabbanan, that if you have an area that's surrounded by a wall, if the wall is not intended to make the area habitable for human dwelling, so therefore, midrabbanan, you're still not allowed to carry there. So that the shear of a karpef is yoser mebeis sasayim. So two beis se'oz is the shear of a karpef. A karpef is smaller than that, it doesn't have the status of a karpef. But bigger than the beis sasayim, you're not allowed to carry there, even if it's surrounded by a wall. This is one of the major problems in contemporary Erevin, not so much in cities, if you will, Erevin in cities, but especially in more suburban areas. So you have, even though the area is surrounded by Tzuras HaPesach, the strings that we colloquially call an Eruv, so if there's an area in there that it could be considered a karpef that is not suitable at all for human normal habitation, then it could passle the entire Eruv.
What about a park,
central park? A park is for human habitation.
Oh, all right.
Areas in there that are planted, maybe right. Not. But if you have a park...
So this would have to be a planted...
Oh, right, a planted field, a marsh maybe, things like that, which are not suitable for people to make use of in terms of normal daily life. So one of the big challenges in an area where you want to put up an Eruv is you have to separately enclose the karpef. So you have to put a little mini Eruv inside the big Eruv around the karpef to set it off from the rest of the Eruv, so your Eruv does not include this karpef. And if you don't do that, then it could be usher to carry in the entire even big Eruv. And you have to warn people when you have... So it says, there's an Eruv, whatever, but if you look at the map, so it says, well, these are areas of karpefos that are separately set off, so you should be careful not to go in there if you're carrying something on Shabbos.
So how do they make an Eruv in a city, let's say Yerushalayim?
There's no karpef, yeah. Or they set them off separately. They enclose them separately. In terms of, we're getting way off topic, but in terms of cities with Erevan, Halavai, Karpev should be the worst issue. Cities are shallow. We have in cities we have shallows of Deraisa, and these Karpev is pashtus only shallow Darabanan. So you're worried about the Karpev. People are worried about other things. Okay, fine, fine. Utvua v'kidnis le'inyan zeh kamin echadhu shiuran be'esrim v'arba bitvua. So for this purpose, the grain and the legumes are like one species, and their shear, when they get mixed together, is 1 in 24. But if you can mix them, no matter the size, but if you have it with zero negina, with the other stuff, then you has to be 1 in 24 in the amount that you would do in the plant in the base sasayim. A base saw, I'm sorry. So some people say that actually, if you have a mixture, so the question is, are you allowed to add on the majority stuff in order to be mevatel the other stuff? So the answer, so some people say yes, some people say no, because when you add on to it, so it looks like you want to plant them together. Whereas if it just accidentally gets mixed in, it doesn't look like you want to plant them together. But if you go ahead and you start being mevatel it, even though your kavana is really you want to just be make it permissible to plant, but you can't do that. You have to specifically take out the minority stuff in order to make sure that you have less than the required shear, so it doesn't look like you want to plant them together, like you want to take it out. It looks like you want to make it look like you want to take it out. The sages tell us, on the first day of Adar, so we announced to the whole Jewish people that it's time to give the shekel, the annual contribution to the Beis HaMikdash, and to announce to people, to remind them that you're not allowed to plant your fields with forbidden mixtures. The Chol Echa, that's why we have Parsha Shkolim nowadays. That's the first of the Arba Parshios. The four Parshios that we read in the Adar season is Parsha Shkolim, in order to have a remembrance of what they used to do in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. They used to announce to everyone to give the shekel. We don't read Parshas Kilayim. Okay. So everybody goes out to his field and uproots the kilayim. The cholshen, even if you didn't do it back, even if you didn't actually plant them together, so still, if somehow they got mixed and together, so it looks like you wanted it together in your fields, therefore you're not allowed to do it.
So wait a second. So in other words, if you say you thought you were just planting one min, and
right.
You are looking around at your garden or whatever,
right.
You see that there's some other min that's strayed in there. You have to pull it up.
Right.
Right.
Because now if you tend to your garden, it's like, ooh, great, kilayim. No, wonderful. V'chol shehein shnei minin, afa bishadomen bitzura sonosur mishum kilayim. So it's somewhat arbitrary, which are considered two separate species, and which are not considered two separate species, kind of like with the animals, that it's we don't have good principles as to what's considered the same species and what's considered separate species of the animals. So if you have two of the exact same species, even if they look very different because of different gardening techniques, I don't know how different you can make plants look with different gardening techniques, or because one grew in a cold climate and one grew in a hot climate, so whatever it is, it doesn't matter. As long as ancestrally they're the same species, you're okay. Harehu kemin echad. V'dine shi'uri harhachoka hatzricha bein shnei minim rabim. There are many halachos regarding the amount of space required between the two different species. So he's going to give one specific example. V'shir ha'choka shnei minei yerek shelo yinku zemizeh. So the shear for separating two types of vegetables is that they shouldn't derive any nourishment one from the other. Amru zichrono levracha. Shu tefach u'mechtza l'chol echad. Everyone needs a radius of 1.5 tfachim, approximately 15 centimeters. Shenimtza revach bein shneihem shlosha tvachim. So since each one is a radius, so you have a total distance between them of 3 tvachim. U'mashamra b'mishnah b'kilayim perigimbo. V'biyo so gamkin b'shabes perigam Rebbe Akiva. Sha'aruga shishisha al shisha tvachim. So the Mishnah brings a case where you have a garden patch, and it's 6 tvachim by six tvachim square. Zorin lesocha chamisha zeronin. You could plant 5 different types of seeds in there. Well, if dvareinu ayhem lo martisha, according to us, we should have said 9, because you can squeeze 9 in if you plant all at the corners, and whatever, you should be able to get 9 different types of species there. So 8 on the corners, I mean, and on the sides of the border, and 1 in the middle. It's not shver. That this apply. This is talking about a garden patch that's within the grouping of other garden patches. Therefore, you can't plant mamish at the corners, and you have to bring it a little bit inside. Therefore, you only have room for 5 within the garden patch, and not room for 9. And if we can look, we can pass around these beautiful diagrams of exactly what the Sefer Chinuch is talking about, in case you ever want to become a farmer in Eretz Yisrael. You can know exactly how much space within a garden patch you have in order to plant different things. And for other things, it's different halachos, but again, we're not gonna go into it. The Chinuch doesn't go into it, so we're not gonna discuss it extensively now. What's the general rule? That as long as there's the correct distance between the two plants, which is a tefach and a half, even if the plants grow big and the leaves intermingle, so this doesn't matter. If they clearly look distinct from each other, so if then even if you bend over the branches and the leaves to amamish go inside the other garden patch from the top, so it doesn't matter, even though it derives nourishment because it goes by the roots. So it's not that one derives nourishment from the other, it's that the two of them derive nourishment reciprocally from the other, and it has to be immediately visible and recognizable to people looking at it. And we're not farmers, we don't know what's immediately recognizable and visible as kilayim, but in any event, that's the din. By the way, the Rambam holds that you don't give each one a tefach and a half, you give both of them a tefach and a half together, so he gives you a closer space you can plant the two together. Okay. You need a distinguishing distance or feature if you plant it within your field. Let's say you planted your field with wheat, and your friend who lives right next door wants to plant his field with barley, then that is allowed, even if he goes right up next to yours. Shenemar sodcha lo sizra kilayim. Your field you shall not plant kilayim. Kilomar sodcha davka. Shenemar haaretz lo sizra kilayim. It's not a prohibition on the land that it cannot be planted with kilayim. It's that you, when in fields that are under your control, you're not allowed to plant kilayim. But it doesn't mean that you're allowed to go into your friend's field and plant all the kilayim you want, because obviously if it's your field, you're responsible for the kilayim in it. But it just means that they could go next to each other. Lomar the davka ba'aretz u'shenoag yisr kilei zorim. This whole prohibition only applies in Eretz Yisrael. Aval lo b'chutzal aretz, not outside the land of Israel. Be'afal gav delinin harkavas ilan the davka lan gam kein misadcha lo amrukei nel shenoag mikom b'chol makom. So what should be the difference? The prohibition of grafting trees also is derived from the words sadcha, your field. So why should that apply outside the land of Israel? So the Amora Shmuel tells us that in terms of the grafting of the trees, that aspect of the prohibition of kilayim is analogous to the prohibition of intermating animals, so which is applicable in all places because it's not tied into the land. So therefore, the prohibition of grafting trees is applicable even outside the land of Israel. So for Kartzerzu Adavar Zichron Vracha Sham Kiddushin, it's a whole long sugi in Kiddushin. In Cheftzach Beni Ladas Tirenu Misham. Go look in Kiddushin. I can only make the Sefer Chinuch so long. V'yesa Rubei Pratea Mivarim B'Maseches Kil Ayim. Fine. So these are all explained in Maseches Kil Ayim. All the rest of the myriad details. Minchas Chinuch points out that there's a din by Truma Sumaisris, according to the Rambam and other Shitas, that even though the Kedusha of the land of Israel at the time of when it was re-sanctified at the time of Ezra, and the time of the original Bayis Rishon and the kings, so and the time that they originally conquered the land of Israel from the Canaanites in the times of Yoshua, so they didn't sanctify the land of Israel forever. When they were exiled from the land, the Kedusha was undone. So when they came back in the time of Ezra, so that sanctification was forevermore. That they explicitly stated that they're giving Eretz Yisrael the din of Eretz Yisrael. How this works exactly is not exactly clear, but they're giving it the din of Eretz Yisrael forever. However, so therefore the laws of Kilayim apply even midaraisa nowadays in the land of Israel. But the Sefer Chinuch points out that this is not the case with Truma Sumaisris, because we know that Rambam Shita, at least, in Truma Sumaisris is that since it says, Kisovo el Haaretz, when you come into the land, so it only applies when the Jewish people comes into the land. So that means that these rules, even though the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is absolutely 100% Eraisa, the rules of Truma Sumaisris only apply when Midah Eraisa, when the Jewish people is mostly living in the land of Israel. So this does not apply to Kilayim. The laws of Kilayim are applicable in the land of Israel always, irrespective of whether the most of the Jewish people is living in the land of Israel or not.
What are the boundaries?
What do you mean?
What are the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael when this applies?
That's a good question.
Because they told the Euphrates.
No. It's not. It's not the boundaries that were promised. That there is only. It's only the boundaries that were actually sanctified in the time of Ezra.
So, like, Eilat is a question.
Correct.
Right?
Eilat is not part of this, yeah. There's a whole shaila about what's called the Arava, that there's a certain section in the southern Eretz Yisrael, in the northern Negev, so there's a big shaila as to whether that's actually considered Eretz Yisrael or not. So some people are makel that like for Shemitah, for example, so they get a lot of stuff from the Arava, so others feel it is part of Eretz Yisrael. You can't. It's a whole... V'noheg yeser kilei zroim bizchayim unikevos. Obviously applies to both males and female farmers. Beretz Yisrael bilvad kimo shemarnu in the land of Israel. Val b'chutz la'aretz mutter. La'arif ha'zroim lechatchilo zorim. You're allowed to even in one handful throw down different types of seeds in order to grow together.
And once it's been grown together, lechutz la'aretz, can you plant that species in Eretz Yisrael?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The plant, it only applies to the original planting, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're smutter bahna, right?
Correct.
Regardless,
correct.
Yeah. See, that's why you don't have any hashkochas, which say, specify that there's a nakidish chashash,
Kilayim, yeah. Right, because it doesn't affect at all the kashrus of the food, 100%. Ba'afilu baretz ein Israel, Yisrael, this only applies to a Jew. Aval mutter lomar legoy l'Israel o kilayim. You're even allowed to tell a goy to plant it for you, which is very odd. There's a whole sugya as to why the normal rules of Amira Lagoi don't apply. They're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do an Avera for you. It's Machlokes Rambam Ravid. So if you ever come into the Shaila with that you want to ask a non-Jew to do it for you in Eretz Yisrael, we can discuss it then. But if the Goy plants it in your field, you have to uproot it. The Chozesha Marnu, Dafka Bechile Zroim, Avakile Ilanos, Kilomar Kava, Shehi, Asura Baino, I guess it will be Chuzlar's Kemosha Marnu, but this doesn't apply to grafting trees, which is also applicable outside the land of Israel. You're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to graft it for you, even outside the land of Israel. It's actually an independent prohibition for the non-Jew. It's not one of the Shevas Mitzvahs B'nei Noach per se, but it's something, the Chazal had a tradition, even though certain things were not explicitly included in Shevas Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, then there's still Aser for non-Jews, one of which is grafting trees, that even non-Jews are not allowed to graft trees. They don't get the penalties for violating Shevas Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. It's just Aser, and they're not allowed to do it, which is very interesting. Ve'over al-zeh ben isho isha. You get the penalty of lashes. I don't know how you can graft a vegetable with a tree. I don't know how that's that could even work. But whatever it is, if you graft improperly, even if that's in the outside the land of Israel, so you still receive the penalty of lashes. It's an issue. It's a prohibition. Mi
deoraisa. So actually, this. A question only on small scale gardening, because in any large scale agriculture, you definitely do, you know, you're very careful not to have any, you know, different kinds of seed there, because everything's harvested by machine and will sort of spoil the, you know, the produce, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if we're looking for something that's more applicable, see, the last mitzvah was applicable because outside the land of Israel, now to graft trees. That's very good to know. But here there's something that is perhaps more applicable for the non-farmers among us, which is mitzvah Resh Mem Vav 246, Shelo Lechol Orla, not to eat Orla, which is the fruits that grow during the first 3 years of a tree's life. Shelo nochal miperos ha'ilon toch zman orloso, that we should not eat from the fruits of a tree during the time of its orla. Vein shalo shanim rishonos lintiyaso, that it's the 3 first years of the after the tree was planted.
So maybe the fruit doesn't even grow until 2 or 3 years later.
Correct. A lot of times that's true, that the fruit does not grow in the first 3 years, so it's not even that applicable. It's correct. But it applies from the planting, as we'll see, that it could be that the tree was alive for 20 years, you know, not being planted in dirt or something in, a pot. And then if you actually plant it, so then the orla starts. That's very interesting. So even if you plant a sapling or you plant a cutting from a tree, even if the tree is 50 years old, if you plant a new cutting from the tree, then you have required to observe orla with a new cutting. Yeah. 3 years it shall be literally uncircumcised. It shall not be eaten. The Vrchino does not mention that it's also asur bahana'a. Not only are you not allowed to eat orla, but you're not allowed to derive any benefit from orla whatsoever. It has to be destroyed.
Not allowed to sell it.
Correct.
Or if you had like an esrog tree and it produced an esrog in the first 3 years, you wouldn't be allowed to...
Yeah, you're not yotze. Absolutely. You're not yotze the mitzvah because it's asur bahana'a if you have an esrog shel orla. Mishor she mitzvah zo kasafti be mitzvah neta revai. Huh? Did we do the mitzvah neta revai yet?
Not yet.
No, it's actually the next mitzvah, but in the Sefer Chinuch's original order, the mitzvah saseh came first. So even though the orla is mentioned first in the parsha, in the original order, the neta revai came first. The neta revai is the mitzvah of what you do with the produce in the fourth year. You're allowed to eat it, but you have to redeem it. So he says here in the Shoshia mitzvah, basically, that it's sort of we'll do it in detail when we get the neta revai, but it's sort of like an idea of bikurim. That the first real fruits of the tree, because normally in the first couple of years that tree does not produce fruit. So when you get to the fourth year, it's starting to produce fruit, so you give it to Hashem, and you have to redeem it or eat it in Yerushalayim. You don't give it to God, literally, but you have to do something holy with it. It's like Bikurim. It's just an idea of giving thanks to God for the first fruits of the tree, and then, so really, according to that, then the mitzvah of Orla is really a Hechsher mitzvah for Neta Revai. Which is interesting. The point of the orla is just to create the possibility of net revai of treating the fruit as holy for the fourth year.
You said all you have to do is something holy with it, and that kind of
In the fourth year of the tree, you have to redeem the fruit.
I understand. Yeah? But you said redeem the fruit or do something holy with it. If you
No. You have to you have to either redeem it or you can eat it in Yerushalayim. It's like Maaser Sheni. We'll get in the next mitzvah. We'll get there. Fine. So test b'zeh seder b'shem harambam zichron alivracha. Okay, we'll get there. Bidini ha-mitzvah ma'asha amru zichron alivracha. Now this is very fascinating. Shanotea lisyagu l'koros pater min ha'orla. If your explicit intent when you planted the tree, honest intent obviously, you can't think, I'm planting this for... just to be a fence around my garden. If you want a little bit of trees to be, a fence for something, a barrier, then that is exempt from orla. If you want the tree just for its wood, you're not interested in the fruits at all, so the tree is exempt from the mitzvah of orla at all. If it happens to produce some fruit, and you really didn't plant it for the fruit, but oh, here's the fruit, I guess I'll take it, so you're allowed to eat it.
You can't cut fruit trees down, I thought, though.
What do you mean, to harvest the fruit?
No, to cut, I thought the fruit trees, and there's is there cutting down fruit trees, or is that...
It's a good point. Yes.
So how can you go in and say,
It is normally prohibited to fell a fruit tree even for its timber. Nevertheless, as Chinuch writes there are a number of exclusions to this prohibition. The case of planting the tree for the purpose of using its wood is presumably referring to such a situation. I have to be in suspense till we get to mitzvah 529.
Okay,
have a ways to go. A little less than 300 to go. The Eitz Ma'achol Kosuv, the Pasuk says that you plant a edible tree. So if you just want the tree to be a fence, to get wood, whatever. So if you really honestly have in mind that you're not planting it at all in order to get the fruit, then you do not have the prohibition of Orla. If originally you planted it for these purposes, but then you decided, no, maybe I like the fruit also, then now you are chayev in orla. As long as at any point in the tree's existence you thought that you were going to use it for fruit, honestly, then you are liable for the issue of orla. The shomer hapri chayev orla. Not only the fruit itself, but literally the protector of the fruit. So the for example, like orange peels, mm-hmm. We consider it to be a shomer. Voshadarshu es pirio, es atofel pirio. Not just the fruit, but since it says it uses the word es, which is part of normal Hebrew grammar, but sometimes the Chachamim darshu that it means to include something else, so it means that includes the protector of the fruit. Kolomer shomer hapri, uvitnoim hayidun l'rabbeinu zichron alvracha, shiye oser hashomer, with certain specific conditions, v'heim shiye hashomer omed b'pri adsha shiigi hapri l'chal eser orla, that has to be protecting the fruit until the time where it could, the orla prohibition kicks in, until it actually brings forth the fruit, as opposed to just in the flower, I think. So it has to be that if you took away the shomer, then the fruit would die. But if you took away the shomer and the fruit wouldn't die, then you could use those shomrim during the time of Orla without concern for violating the prohibition.
Just a peel. Just a shomrim.
Right.
Not the fruit.
No. Chayev orla min ha'evyonos bilvad. So capers are liable for orla. What are these technical botanical terms? I have to get...
Capers, yes.
What does it say?
Many days.
It says that only the berries are subject to orla, avala kafris and mutter, but the husks are not included in the prohibition of orla. Right, so it's talking about... Fine, okay. So if you took away the husks before the caper developed into a full caper fruit and thus would thus be prohibited due to Orla, so it wouldn't die, so therefore it's not fully considered a shomer. There's something that Sefer Chinuch doesn't mention that the Minchas Chinuch throws in, which is that the juices that come out of the fruit are permitted. They are not subject to the prohibition of Orla, with the exception of, drum roll, grapes and olives. Grapes and olives are the only fruits that on a deraisa level that their juice is considered fruit, as opposed to just some, it's called zea ba'alma, just the sweat of the fruit or something like that. But wine and olive oil are really considered the fruit of the grapevine or the olive tree. So those would be absolutely prohibited because of Orla. You would get the penalty of Malkus if you drank it, which would not be the case if you drank orange juice, for example, of Orla. V'din hanotei al harabim. Fine, but if you plant for not your own purpose, but for a communal tree in your field, banotei al mitzvah, if you plant an esrog tree, not to eat the esrogim, but just to have them for the mitzvah purpose, if you plant in with a potted plant that has a hole in the bottom, so we said halachically it derives nourishment from the ground, shechayev borla. So all these things are liable for the issue of orla. V'dil nyalda shesibcha bizkena, a young tree that you wrapped it around an older tree, V'yeser pratea medvarim v'seches orla. All the different details of the different details are found in Maseches Orla. So it's talking about, let's say you had a young tree and you chopped it off and you grafted it onto a tree that was older than 3 years, but the new tree that you grafted on, the younger tree, already had fruit growing on it. So what is that? What's the din of that fruit? So the din of that fruit is the Orla. So Orla, we know, is Batel, not 1 in 60. We have another weird shear of Bittel, but 1 in 200.
Does Orla apply
in Chutla'aretz? Excellent question. This applies in all places and all times for males and females. It's a negative command, commandment, so obviously it applies to both males and females. B'chosav ha-Rambam zichron al-bracha. The Rambam tells us, Zelishono, this is not the Rambam's Chiddush. He's quoting the Gemara, the Mishnah, and the Gemara in Kiddushin. The Iser Orla Bechutz al-Aretz Halacha Lemoshe Misinai. What does the Pasuk say? Vayaki Savo el Haaretz Untatem Kaleitz Machal Varotem, whatever it says. The Pasuk says that when you come into the land and you plant the fruit tree, then you have the prohibition of Orla. So you might think, why should this apply in Chutz al-Aretz? No, the tradition is that it applies outside the land of Israel, not as a pure deraisa, which is clearly the pasuk is only talking about Eretz Israel, but it applies as a halacha lemoshe misinai. The Mishnah just says that the orla in Chutz al-Aretz is a halacha. So what does it mean it's a halacha? The Gemara brings machlokas is whether it means halacha lemoshe misinai or it means something that they were just knowing by themselves. So the conclusion is that orla in Chutz al-Aretz is halacha lemoshe misinai. Omnam lashon ha-Torah hu ba'aretz bilvad. Lefisha adkan. Lefisha batora namar beferish ki savo el haaretz untatem. Demashadavka baretz. On the right level, it's only in Eretz Yisrael. Uveperish omer zichron al-bracha binyan orla. Kichach namar alea halacha lemoshe misinai. That it's only in a certain manner that the prohibition of orla is stated in Chutz al-Aretz as halacha lemoshe misinai. Let me ask you, Mrs. Hirsch. When you go to the grocery store to buy fruits, do you check the fruit for a hashgacha? Yeah, you only buy fruit with a hashgacha in America. No. Why? But we just learned that orla is noeg in Chutz al-Aretz. How can you be sure that your fruits are not orla?
I'm just amazed.
Do you have? What should we start having? You know, like a little OU engraved on the apple or plant with the edible ink or something. No, we don't need to do that. Why? Vada'a osur sfeika mutter. The only prohibition of Orla in Chutz la'aretz is if you know for sure that the fruit is Orla, which is extremely unusual halachically. Normally, if you have a prohibition, a deraisa prohibition, we know that any safek is usur. If you have a doubt about whether sveika deraisa l'chumra. And even when we say safek derabanan l'kula, when we have a suffolk doubt as to what should be whether a rabbinical prohibition applies, that means if you have a legitimate doubt, you really are not sure, you're totally up in the air about what should be done regarding this rabbinic prohibition. But the orla in Chutz la'aretz is even more lenient. It's a very unusual formulation of halacha. Kilomar she'ein inyan isura kemo sha'ar isurin shebatorah. That it's not like any other prohibition in the Torah. Shekol zman shigischadesh aleinu suffik badavar shehu asur min haTorah yishlanu lesor osu misuffik. So anytime there's a doubt regarding a biblical prohibition, we need to go stringently. The kainal and suffik, the right suffik is a Torah asur. And when there's something that's a potential Torah prohibition, there's a doubt about it, then you have to go stringently. And there's a question as to whether this principle is a deraisa principle or a derabanan principle. It's a famous argument in the Rishonim and then the Achronim discussing their shitas as to whether this concept that you always have to go stringently regarding a biblical prohibition, whether that concept itself is deraisa or it's only a rabbinic stringency that you have to go stringently regarding any Torah prohibition. Okay. Uchmochein be'arnu im peirushim hatovim. Shesafek halacha lemoshe misinai l'chumra. So and normally when there's a safek regarding halacha lemoshe misinai, as is orla in Chutz la'aretz, so we should go stringently. Uveinian iser orla ki balnu ki beferush namar lemoshe sheheisfeka mutter. But part of the original formulation of the prohibition of orla in Chutz la'aretz is that any doubt is permitted.
Where is that?
What do you mean?
Where
it's a tradition. There's no where.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
There's no where, yeah.
V'chevan shekeinhu, she'ein iser orla chal klal b'sveika, Yisrael she'yesh lo ilan shel orla b'ginoso v'chavero v'ochal mimenu, ad kedei kach, this is amazing, that let's say you have a tree that you planted in your backyard, you know for sure exactly when you planted, so you know for sure that for the first 3 years, the produce of this tree is orla. Mm-hmm. So if your friend comes over to your house and says, oh, that's a gorgeous plum tree you have in your backyard, and you're in so close that, you know, you don't mind eating from each other's food without permission, and your friend goes to your tree that in the backyard, your plum tree that you just planted 2 years ago, grabs a plum, starts munching, Eino nizkak lehodio klal shehu orla. You don't have to tell the person that it's Orla.
Oh, wow.
Because it goes vis-a-vis the eater. As long as the eater doesn't know that it's Orla, it's mutter.
Wow.
This is extremely fascinating. It's the only halacha that's like this, where you can just cover your eyes and say, you know, I don't know. I don't know any better, so I can eat it. So that's why you're allowed to buy fruit in America in any store. Because it's all suffix. You don't know for sure. It could be. But you don't know for sure that this is Orla. Even if there's a 50-50 chance, you're still allowed to eat it.
So the
same thing could even apply if you go into a roadside fruit stand, and it's right by a field where you know that all the trees in that field are Orla, and they're probably selling from those trees. Even so, you're allowed to buy from that fruit stand because you don't know for sure. Again, if somebody tells you for sure that something is Orla, then you're not allowed to eat it. But again, the Minchas Chinuch points out that even though if your friend comes into your backyard and takes a plum from the fruit tree that you know to be Orla, you don't have to tell him that this is Orla. You're not allowed to take it and give it to him via dayim. You're not allowed to take, here's a plum, delicious plum, try my plum. So far you're not allowed to do. Others, I think, are lenient even on that. That really, as long as the person, in the person's mind, this is not 100% for sure, grabbed it off the tree of Orla, it's okay. So this is why we don't have to check for Echsherim on fruits outside the land of Israel, even though the prohibition of Orla doesn't really apply, but really, Lemaisa, practically speaking, it would only apply to trees that you know personally their history, and you personally took the Orla from them. So really, it's very, very difficult to find such a situation. The same thing would be by Esrogim. They're grown outside the land of Israel, so you can use them. You don't have to worry about having a Hechsher for Orla. But in fruits, if you're buying fruits in Israel, you have to make sure that your fruit stand has a good Hechsher. Because even though for vegetables, for example, though they're not, if it's not a Shemitah problem, if for a normal year, so if you have buy vegetables, even without a Hechsher in Eretz Yisrael, so you can fix it yourself. You can take the Trumas Umaisos yourself. You don't technically need a Hechsher on vegetables, even if you're buying them in the land of Israel. If you want them to have taken the Trumas Umaisos for you, you don't want to do it yourself, so you have to make sure that there's a good Hechsher involved. But for Orla, you need to, for fruits, you have to make sure that the fruit that you're buying from either someone personally, a farmer personally who's a firm person, has an amonos on kashrus, or that the store that you're buying from has an excellent hechsher. That's why it causes problems. So the stands in Machane Yehuda have hechsherim for the most part.
Right.
All of them? Yeah. So some stands have Rabbanut Hechsher, which not everybody buys. They want this badatz or that badatz. So the reason that, again, vegetables, you can for sure buy Rabbanut, and you can buy some of them yourself. That's no question whatsoever. But fruits, Rabbanut might have certain kulas by Orla that not everyone accepts. So that's why, especially for fruits, people insist on their...
So that would be all supermarkets, too?
Well, you could miser it yourself in there. But that's the problem also when you have Israeli carrots, for example, that may be found in the stores in Washington Heights, as occasionally happened, then you can miser them yourself because they came from Israel. Okay, the miser in Chutz La'aretz may be more lenient, but whatever it is, the miser paskin, you have to miser it if they don't have hechsher. But if you find fruits, there's sometimes Israeli clementines, for example, then you have a serious problem because it doesn't have a proper Hechsher. You can't fix that. There's no way of fixing Orla. You can't just separate Shumas and Maisus. That's why you have to make sure.
So then the Sharon fruits actually had more than just a Shemitah problem.
That's correct, but we looked it up and we said that, I think the OU said on their website that these trees, the vast majority, don't produce edible fruits during the years of Orla, so that's why there was room to be mekel on the persimmons. But that's not so pashut either. There's an issue that, let's say you find, you know that, can you go according to the majority? So sometimes in Israel, I used to say, I once asked a mashkiach in the yeshiva I was at in Israel, I said, why do we have to be makbet to buy the badatz? The only fruits, badatz, eid acharedis, that were very makbet about Orla. Why do you have to buy those? Can't you just go according to the majority? We have a principle that when you buy fruits, so if you, as someone has to just, you know, figure out that, you know, first of all, like we said before, so a lot of fruit trees don't produce good fruits during the first 3 years. So if you have nice, good fruits, and most of the trees in Eretz Yisrael are not Orla, so if you find a random fruit and it doesn't have a perfect hechsher, so are you allowed to eat it? Because can you go by the majority not being Orla? So according to some poskim, yes. If you just, if you don't have access to fruit with a fantastic hechsher regarding Orla, then you're allowed to eat it because you can go according to the majority, assuming the majority of these fruits are not Orla. Then you'll have to do it. But Rav Yoshev had a chumra. This was a case of called kavua. There's a principle in halacha that when a suffix arises in a place that's established, what do I mean? There's a difference, for example, if you find a piece of meat lying on the street and there are 9 kosher butchers and 1 not kosher butcher, so maker adin, so you can assume that since it came out, it was porish, it separated from the other things, the other piece of meat, so you are allowed to use a maker adin. Midrabban, we have chumras of what we call basar shenis alim in ayin. If you have meat that you lost track of, then you're not allowed to eat it, but in any event. But if you bought meat at a store, and you don't remember which store you bought it from, whether it was the kosher or not kosher, so that's usser, even if most of the stores are kosher. Because since the suffix arose at a place where the meat had not yet separated, where it was set, it's a whole complicated principle, but nevertheless, so you have to go, it's considered to be like a 50-50 suffix, even if, in fact, most of the stores are kosher. So Rav Yashiv held that since the suffix arises when the fruit is on the tree in the fields, that's considered like kavuas, so therefore, maker adin, you're not allowed to eat fruits in Eretz Yisrael, unless it has a good hechsher, because, of course, you don't apply the principle that you have in Chutz Laretz that any suffix is mutter. You have to be sure that the fruit that you're eating is not Orla, and it's a very very big issue in terms of eating in Eretz Yisrael and in terms of getting exported Israeli produce in America. V'chein ze matzino b'gemara z'amr zichra v'racha sofik li v'ana eichol kolomer k'shikol zman shlo yada ha'adam b'vadai shu Orla shari leila meichal mina. If you don't know for sure that the thing is Orla, then you're allowed to eat it. Again, that only applies in Chutz Laretz, not in Eretz Yisrael. I remember I once went into the offices of the Kashrus department of the Eid HaCharedis, and it was an amazing experience. I was only in there for approximately 2 minutes, but it's this old, dilapidated building, dirty, whatever. Then, like, you open, there's one door that says Kashrus department. You open the door, it's like walking into a different world. Everything is fancy with computers, the latest technology, the latest, everything beautifully appointed, nice. It's like, it was very interesting. So I saw that they had a lot of maps on the wall of all of the areas of different fruit orchards in Eretz Yisrael, keeping track of exactly which trees, when they were planted, in order to assure that it wasn't going to be Orla, which is very, very interesting. If you eat a kezayis of Orla, or from the protector of the fruit, and it's a shaila, by the way, by if you drink wine or olive oil, whether the shia is a revias or a kezayis. Fine, the types of shomer that's prohibited with it, chayamalkus, you receive the penalty of lashes.